Okay, let's talk about ice, right? Also known as deflation. And you know, I'm going to talk a little bit about art. I have a great friend, a really good friend, who is a art appraiser. And she tells me a little bit about what's going on with art when we talk and et cetera. It's really quite fascinating. And it caught my attention that one of the things which is the bellwether, the canary in the mine shaft when it comes to deflation, it's what happens with the pricing and the value of, shall we say, kind of top of the line and unusual assets. And one of those top of the line unusual assets is art. So that you know, the art world is kind of, particularly at the high end, is kind of turning upside down, and it's just been in the last 6 months. You know, the wealthy, the powerful, all invest in art. I mean, number one, it's a status thing, it's an ego thing, but it's also truly an investment. The auction record for a painting, listen to this, it's amazing, was set in 2013. Francis Bacon, and I'm not an art connoisseur, but I guess he's a big name painter type guy. One of his pieces called The Three Studies of Lucian Freud sold for $142.4 million. This is one painting, folks. Think about that. And then it was surpassed last May, 6 months ago, by version O of Picasso's Las Femmes d'Alger. I know I pronounced that wrong. Series. Once again, I have not a clue what that is. I do know who Picasso is. Which sold for $179.4 million. This is a painting. You know, a piece of canvas with oil that goes on your wall. Okay. I would imagine it's going on the wall of a $20 million house. You now have a painting, which is worth 10 times more than your house, hanging on the wall of your house. Oh, well, I'm not here to judge. However, in the last 6 months, this is the key. And I quote, more than half of the works at Phillips 20th Century and Contemporary Art Auction sold below their estimates if they sold at all, unquote. This is a story in the Financial Times. Sotheby's, you know, they're a huge auction house. They auction all sorts of stuff. They're known for their art auctions. They're auctioning a Cy Twombly chalkboard painting. Once again, I don't know who this guy is. I just know it's a piece of art. They're hoping to get more than $60 million. Well, they're not getting those kind of bids. Their stock's down almost 5 or 10%. And this was as of November 9th, by the way. And ice is really, yeah, how can I define this for you? If ice is deflation, ice is really the loss of your power to price something for a value. Because the market won't pay it. And therefore its value, i.e. its price, goes down and you have deflation. And you have deflation now occurring in the art market, the canary in the gold mine. And of course you have had deflation occurring over the last year in oil. Much more complex because there's a battle with OPEC producing way more oil than they need to try and strangle the American producers so that the American producers stop producing so OPEC can raise their price. It's complicated. I'm going to talk about it in one of our upcoming shows because it's important that you understand it. I'm just saying that there's other factors in oil, but commodities, gold, silver, platinum, copper, I think iron ore hit the lowest in its recorded annals of pricing just a week ago. And oil was down to like $38 a barrel. I mean, you're going to see your prices go down at the pump again. But remember, it's a two-edged sword. As the prices go down, your friends lose their jobs. And there's all sorts of reports in the media. And remember, I get, you know, loads and loads and loads of media. There's all sorts of reports in the media about grocery stores and department stores complaining about ICE, right? Deflation. Whole Foods, Walmart, Kroger, Super Value, Roundy's. You know, prices are falling at grocery stores. Have you noticed that finally? And their earnings reports are down. And their stocks are going down. Restaurant stocks, same thing. You know, cost pressures squeeze profit margins. Sales growth slows. Profits go down. Share prices go down, et cetera, et cetera. It's a vicious circle. All I'm trying to say is we are now in the grips of a deflation. In fact, I was reading one piece, which I'm probably going to post next week. We did not post it this week. That says only rural properties on which you can maintain a relatively self-sufficient lifestyle, are holding value right now. So, I guess people are beginning to prize security as a store of value, which also tells you something about people's mentality. So the next thing that we're going to talk about here, because one of these days I'm going to do a big show on the economy, because after this deflation we're going to have inflation. It's a long story, I'm not going to tell it to you now, but it's something you need to understand for you, your kids, and your kids' kids. It's really important. We're in a paradigm shift in the economy right now. We're in a paradigm shift in geopolitical consequences. We're in a paradigm shift in the war cycles, which I'm going to talk about a little bit later in the show. This is all tied in. All tied in. So, let's talk about some really scary stuff in China. Oh, and by the way, I forgot to mention. Did you know that between November 9th and November 16th, right, this is just 2 weeks ago, give or take, we went off certain budget constraints at the federal government. And do you know, wow, our debt went up $100 billion in the first 3 days. $100 billion in the first 3 days. The debt of the country, the debt of the consumers, the subprime debt of cars and student loans, and I've talked about this on previous shows. Look it up in the archives. Maybe my producer can even get a link up to it. $60 trillion in consumer debt, $20 trillion in primary national debt, $200, depending upon which economist you talk to, $110 to $220 trillion in unfunded liabilities at the national and state levels, pensions, Medicare, Social Security, etc. Folks, do you really think if you add all that up, which is like $300, $350 trillion, that's trillion with a T, do you really think that can be repaid? Do you think that has something to do with people realizing it and something to do with the ICE concept, the deflation concept we just started talking about? You think it has something to do with terror and people's fear and the war cycles with the world falling apart? Aided and abetted, I might add, by Barry, Sop, Kerry, Valerie, and the rest of the motley treasonous crew. You bet it does. It's all tied in. And it all affects you. It affects you every day. More and more so. And more so, you need to be self-reliant. You need to subscribe to survival-type magazines. I don't mean you have to be a wild-eyed prepper. You need to have the basics. I've done many shows on this. I started that new column on the articles down below under family safety. Obviously, I can't, you know, put 30 articles in there every week, but there's some really good tips, really good merchandise, really good thoughts for you. Read it. Think. Think about what you would need to survive with no power, no fuel, no communications, And if you could get to a grocery store, the shelves would be empty. Think about what you need to survive, you and your family, for at least 6 months. Give it some thought. And by all means, with Barry and crew running amok on gun control, a government obviously either unable or unwilling or both to protect this, if you have a gun, get another. And make sure you're stocked up on ammo. And if you don't have a gun, you're a fool. Get armed. Get trained. Learn how to use it. It's a lifetime skill. If you never take it out of its holster, except for target practice, it's a lifetime skill. You can only win. It's like having 5 years of soup and other foods, dried foods, whatever it happens to be, in your pantry. If you never need them, you can eat them over time and save yourself some money, since eventually food prices will be going back up. And if you do need them, it's the difference between life and death. I don't mean to be overly dramatic here, but things are unraveling at a rapidly alarming pace on a lot of different levels. And the debt that we have incurred, that $350 trillion, just in the United States, that can't be repaid, it's impossible to be repaid, that will come home to roost one of these days, particularly when we have such good friends, remember Hillary's reset, the Russians, the Chinese, the folks from India, the BRIC countries, the United Nations and the International Monetary Fund working industriously to dethrone the dollar as reserve currency. And I've done a slew of shows on that. That's an automatic, overnight, 25% reduction in the quality of your life and the purchasing power of the dollar. All right. So, in China, think about this. New topic. Although, maybe it's not. Maybe it's interrelated. But the Red Chinese, you remember, they're still a communist country. They've allowed some market relaxation so that the communist government can have more control and they can keep their 1.2 billion residents happy with cheap cars and houses and all that kind of stuff. And they're having some they're having some huge problems of their own in their economy. But they love control, the Chinese do. Remember those pictures in Tiananmen Square? So, the new Chinese credit score, which is being implemented in China, is called by the ACLU, not that I'm huge fans of them, the ultimate tool of social control. Everybody is going to be measured over there in China by a score of 350 to 950. That score will then be linked to their national identity card, which everybody in China has to carry. And I'm quoting now, in addition to measuring your ability to pay, as in the United States, the scores in China serve as a measure of political compliance. Among the things that will hurt a citizen's score are posting political opinions without prior permission, or posting information that the regime does not like, such as about the Tiananmen Square massacre that the government carried out to hold on to power, or the Shanghai stock market collapse. It will hurt your score, I'm still quoting, it will hurt your score not only if you do these things, but if any of your friends do them. Imagine the social pressure against disobedience or dissent that this will create. And everybody's scores will be posted publicly. Therefore, you will know who's dragging your score down. Quote, I'm still quoting now. I mean, this is almost like, you talk about Orwellian. Hello, George Orwell, 1984. Those with higher scores are rewarded with concrete benefits. Those who reach 700, for example, get easy access for a Singapore travel permit, while those who hit 750 get an even more valued visa. And of course, if you're at the low end of the totem pole, I suppose if you're at 350, maybe you're off to the rock pile. And everybody's shaking their head going, wow, that is bizarre. It's unbelievable. It's control. I can see my producer shaking her head right now. Well, guess what, folks? You think it can't happen here? Well, think again. Oh, yes. Because while it's not at that level yet, social media activity is now beginning to impact your fellow American of mine FICO score. That's right. There was an article in the Chicago Tribune several weeks ago. You can look it up online, read the whole thing. A quote from the paper. Now, with so much more personal data out there, companies have come up with a software to capture it. Generally, the technology allows a credit rating company to search for certain keywords, phrases, and slang terms for drinking and partying, like getting smashed, trashed, and wasted. If you look at how many times a person says wasted in their Facebook profile, it has some value in predicting whether they're going to repay their debt. And that's a quote, by the way, from FICO CEO Will Lansing. So it ain't Red China. But you know what? It's only a few steps behind him. What do you think of that? For those of you who think it can't happen here. You know, there was an NSA whistleblower by the name of Bill Binney. I've never done a show on him. Far less renowned than Snowden. But in 2012, testifying before Congress, he said, quote, "The electronic elements are all there for a turnkey totalitarian state," unquote. Something to think about, particularly when you have power-hungry mongrels running amok. Then the next thing we're going to talk about is ISIS contained. You know, our president looked us in the camera, he looked into our eyes and our souls with his big brown eyes, and he moved his lips to reassure us. ISIS is contained, he said. Not so much. Let me tell you that just very recently, like a week or two ago, Islamic State fighters captured the Syrian town of Mahin. They've mounted a major offensive against Sadat, which, by the way, happens to be mostly a Christian town. That will bring them within 13 miles of the main road that links Damascus, the Syrian capital, to their main base in Homs, H-O-M-S. And this expands their hold on north and east of Syria, because not too long ago, a month or two ago, they overran the town of Tadmur, T-A-D-M-U-R, which was also the home of the ancient ruins of Palmyra. I think you remember back about 2 months ago I told you about how they had dynamited all the incredibly ancient artifacts of Palmyra. Yes. They also took the town of, of Al-Karatin. That was in August, a few months before. So, ISIS is not contained, obviously, in terms of its global spread and reach. It's obviously not contained in terms of its ability to pull off terror attacks in Western nations, i.e., the Russian airliner, the Paris attacks, the California attacks. So, you know where I come down, being a simple little rancher? ISIS is not contained, and we were lied to again. At least we have a Joint Chiefs of Staff chairman who testified before Congress, and he said they were not contained just last week. So, I don't think there's anything that we can believe that comes out of this White House. Not a thing. Not one iota, not one sentence, not one verb, not one noun, not one vowel, not one consonant. They're marching to a different drummer. And it's not one of the drummers playing Yankee Doodle Dandy with the stars and stripes flying behind it. All right. For our last little bit here, we're going to talk about the war cycles. I have talked about this several times. In fact, I first talked about it back in 2013, I believe it was, first quarter. And it's a theory. I'm not sure I subscribe to it, but you know, the more crazy the world gets, the more I think it might have some merit. What I really want to talk about, because we all know the world is becoming increasingly chaotic. I don't need to go over that with you here on the show. But this is part of what believers, economists, and futurists who believe in the war cycle, this is what they have forecast. I'll read you a little thing here. A new war cycle has now begun. It will start to ramp up immediately and continue to do so into the year 2020. Wars, revolutions, and chaos will spread and sink major economies. They will drive global commodities into a depression. Remember our ice thing that we talked about, folks? But they will also create a tidal wave of flight capital from the Middle East, Europe, and Asia to the only major nation and only major market in the world that's still perceived as relatively safe and stable, the United States and its blue chip stocks. So, you know, the war cycles. Well, let me give you an idea of what's happening with economies around the globe, because the war cycles, according to these folks, are affecting economies for all the reasons we've gone over here. It's all kind of linked. And remember the ice and the deflation and all that stuff. It's all tied in. We are in an age, which is another paradigm shift, where nothing works independently. Everything is interdependent. So how many major economies in the world do you think are currently improving? Virtually none. Zero. The European Union, the United States, China, Japan, Brazil, Russia, Canada, they're all sinking or slowing or treading water with the water rising up to their noses slowly but surely. How many of the major world commodities aren't in an uptrend? Well, you know, as you know, energy prices have been sliced in half. Crude oil is down like 50% or more. Heating oil is down 40 to 50%. Gasoline's down 35 to 40%. Foods have been clobbered. Coffee's off 38%. Sugar's off 20%. Soybeans are off 15%. All the metals are way down. Nickel's down 40% plus. Zinc's down 30% plus. Copper's down 25 to 30%. Aluminum, 25%. Silver, you know, 10 to 15%. Iron ore reached the lowest it's ever been just a week ago. So all these commodity indexes, if you've been following, energy, food, raw materials, metals, you know, they're at their lows when we had our debt crisis. Remember our $350 trillion debt I just talked about? When we had our debt crisis, when our total debt was only $275 trillion less, in 2008 or 2009. Corporate profits, right? That's kind of what drives stocks and creates jobs and all sorts of stuff. Corporate profits, folks. The first back-to-back quarters of earnings decline since 2009. The earnings recession is here. So if you have all these powerful forces, and that's linked into a ramp-up of the war cycle, which is far from, according to these people, its peak, And you have money rushing out of conflict zones, you know, the Middle East and Western Europe, etc., because people are scared. And you have on top of that, once again, subscribing to the war cycle theory. And I'm not saying I do or don't. I'm throwing it out there. You guys can figure it out for yourself. But let's face it, violence is spreading, right? I mean, you have violence now in the Ukraine. You have violence that used to be concentrated in basically Iraq and Afghanistan that has spread to Syria, Egypt, Libya, Turkey, Yemen, Nigeria, Bangladesh, Sudan, Somalia, and to a lesser degree, Israel. Okay, then you have the refugee Trojan horse that's overflowing into Greece and Macedonia, Serbia, Croatia, Slovenia, Hungary, Austria, Germany, etc., etc. And, you know, people are now much more fearful of travel after the Russian airliner got brought down. You know, the U.S. is involved. Obama lies through his teeth as usual. There's no 65-nation coalition. Make me puke. But the United States is involved in a 10 or 20-nation mission against Islamic State. Britain has just ramped up its bombing runs, and Parliament approved moving them into Syria. That just happened in the last week or so. Australia has now authorized missions by their Boeing Super Hornet bombers. In fact, they began in October of 2014, a year ago. They're ramping those up. Canada, the same. Jordan, as you know, after that pilot was killed by ISIS, they are starting to fly their F-16 Fighting Falcons, bombing the hell out of ISIS. Belgium, Denmark, Netherlands, Turkey, Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, in one way, shape, or form, are involved militarily. Iran is now active, as you know, in Syria, with ground troops, I might add. Hezbollah, mostly sponsored by Iran, of course, provides troops to the Syrian conflict. Russia, as you know, in the last month, has like put its whole program on steroids over there. Who they're bombing remains to be seen. It's mostly, I don't want to call them our guys, it's mostly the morons that Barry spent $500 million training, 50 of them or whatever it is. One of the things you have to understand, this is really important. Muhammad, who obviously is a central figure to Islam, when he died in the 7th century, that is what created the rift between Shias and Sunnis. And then, of course, you have the age-old crusades, you know, Christians against Muslims, Muslims attacking, Christians counterattacking, etc. And then Britain's kind of social engineering over there, where they manufactured the Arab Revolt. You remember, you know the story of Lawrence of Arabia, right? Which brought down the Ottoman Empire and basically reshaped all the boundary lines over there, which Barry, by the way, blames the Western powers of the United States for. Remember, Barry and Valerie, etc., and their crew think that ISIS, deep down, they believe that ISIS and Al-Qaeda and the rest of them are freedom fighters fighting to return these poorly drafted, contrived boundaries set up by the nasty colonial powers back to what they should be. And what you have lining up here, going back to the war cycles, you have the Western nations and their Sunni allies, other than Iran and the United States, not that they're an ally. So that's Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, the other Gulf nations, the Emirates, Kuwait, you name it. So it's the Western nations and the Sunnis against Russia and the Shias, right? Syria, Iran, Hezbollah, Iraq. Can you see the potential here for a huge conflagration? Oh, you bet. You bet. Let's hope it won't happen. But understand that the forces at play out there, yes, we're in a current, to believe these guys, war cycle, the 75-year cycle. But the conflicts out there in the Mideast, folks, are 1,383 years old, okay? It goes back to the death of Muhammad. And obviously something that ingrained, almost 14 centuries, is not going to be solved overnight. Even with Barry sending Valerie as an emissary. I say that facetiously. So we're going to keep an eye on the war cycles here from time to time on this show. Because I brought it to your attention, what, a year and a half ago? Put it out there for your consumption. But I think lately with what's been going on, I'm giving it not complete credence, but more and more. So anyway, that was a lot of information from one show. A lot of dots within the dots. But I hope you understand the interdependence of all these things. How everything is moving ever more rapidly. Kind of like a vortex. And it is affecting, and it will affect, you and all those you love. So stay informed, stand up, be armed, be ready, and I'll be bringing you more. And I'll bring you some more, shall we say, opinions from the book signings and my discussions with thousands of folks here over the next week or two, thousands more. In the meantime, this is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. You have a great Saturday leading up to the Christmas season. Be safe, be happy. We'll talk to you next week.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.